This week on Culturefile, we're preparing for the Messiah season, mapping those few blocks of central Dublin in which a constellation of chancers, charities, choristers and 18th century it girls resulted in the Irish capital being the venue in 1742 for the world premiere of Handel's most durable work. But first, our guide, historian Jonathan Barden, explains why Handel, formerly a fated star of the London entertainment scene, found himself, portable organ in tow, in the Empire's second city.
For many years, Handel had been a brilliant success in London, so much so that other composers found it difficult to make any headway at all. He specialised in Italian opera. An Italian opera meant that you had to bring over divas from Italy and castrati from Italy. But after a while, by the late 1730s, the gentry in London were really getting a bit tired of all of this. They felt that why do we have to go to operas which are always sung in Italian, which we don't understand? John Gay and his Beggar's Opera, sung in English, encouraged them to want something in English themselves and something a bit different. So Handel's career was faltering.
Alexander Pope suggested that he was kind of driven away from London to Ireland.
Yes, Pope wasn't all that interested in music. Nevertheless, he was appalled by many of those who criticised Handel. And he, in a long poem called The Dunciad, declared that Handel had been driven to the Hibernian shore by all that this ignorance in London, by mistress dullness and so on. So when the invitation came from the Charitable Musical Society for the release of imprisoned debtors, Handel probably thought, yes, maybe I'll give it a go, because that charity had allied itself with the Charitable Infirmary and with Mercer's Hospital. And Mercer's Hospital was perhaps the most respectable charity in the whole of Ireland. That meant that the government officials would have said, oh yes, definitely something that we would approve of.
Surprising opposition to the charitable opening of the Messiah came from the Dean at St. Patrick's Cathedral.
Jonathan Swift had been keen to become an English bishop, but he was also a Tory propagandist of great brilliance. But the problem was that when Queen Anne died, the Tories were in trouble and the Whigs came to power. And so when he was offered the lowlier position of being Dean of St. Patrick's Cathedral, he seized it. So he comes over in 1715 and he's actually a very conscientious Dean of St. Patrick's. He saw that Christchurch Cathedral choristers were excellent. He saw that his own choir was appalling, and he spent many years bringing it up to the standard of Christchurch.
But by the time Handel arrived, Swift was a very old man, and it seems a very irascible old man. He was grumpy and not really putting up with anything.
There is no doubt that by 1740, 1741, Jonathan Swift should have been retired from the position of Dean of St. Patrick's. Nowadays, you'd say he had Alzheimer's. And he was extremely forgetful and quarrelled with all his friends. So when Handel, early in 1742, wanted to have the use of choirs, even for charitable purposes from St. Patrick's, Swift forbade it. And it was a very serious moment for Handel. He could not have put on Messiah without the professional, well-trained choristers of both Christchurch and St. Patrick's. You might say, well, could he not have done just with the Christchurch choristers? The problem was that many of those choristers, those vicars choral, were employed by both cathedrals. So if Swift forbade the use of choristers from St. Patrick's, that really meant that there could not be a performance of Messiah.
And we don't really know what happened, do we? We have the letter from Swift forbidding this to happen, and the next thing you know, it happens.
The interesting thing is that most of the other clergy involved like the Reverend Matthew Pilkington, the Reverend Dr. Patrick Delaney, and the like. They were keen followers of contemporary music. So they used their influence to really sideline Swift and make sure he was looked after. But that was it. As Handel was preparing to return to London in the late summer of 1742, he decided he ought to call on Jonathan Swift. And a lady who was a very distinguished poet herself, who wrote quite lurid memoirs about Dublin society, her name was Letitia Pilkington, and she recorded in her memoirs, and I quote, "I was told the last sensible words he uttered were on this occasion. The servant was a considerable time ere he could make the dean understand them, which when he did, he cried, 'Oh, a German and a genius, a prodigy, admit him.' The servant did so just to let Mr. Handel behold the ruins of the greatest wit that had ever lived along the tide of time, where all at length are lost."
He does good endings, that guy. Historian Jonathan Bardon there, author of Alleluia, and next time how the Messiah might never have been born without the help of the scandalous Susanna Cibber.